Hello, I'm Megan Frisk, and welcome to the Science Translational Medicine podcast for October 30th, 2013. In this show, I will be speaking with Dr. Chad Merkin from Northwestern University about treating brain cancer with nanoscale therapeutics. Glioblastoma is an aggressive and deadly brain cancer that affects the glial cells. Treating glioblastoma is a major clinical challenge, as even combining surgery, chemotherapy, and biologics can often not prevent the cancer from recurring. Although new treatments are constantly being designed, a major hurdle is that they must be able to cross the blood-brain barrier. Now, Chad Merkin and his team have developed spherical nucleic acid, or SNA, nanoparticle conjugates that can cross the blood-brain barrier. These nanostructures contain densely packed RNA surrounding a gold core. The RNA inside is called small interfering RNA, or siRNA, which targets and prevents the activity of a cancer-causing gene called BCL2L12. By shutting down this gene, cancer cells die and, in turn, tumors stop growing. The authors successfully tested this SNA-based therapy in mouse models of human glioblastoma. Here now is Chad Merkin on the line to tell us more. Welcome, Dr. Merkin. Thanks for joining us today.
That's good to be here. Thanks.
Can you tell us more about these SNA nanoparticles, how they're made, how they work to regulate gene expression?
They're an interesting advance in nanotechnology. They're made very simply by taking oligonucleotides, which have typically alkylphil end groups, that can plug into a gold nanoparticle and create a spherical arrangement of those nucleic acids on the surface of that gold particle. So the particle acts as a template to assemble this spherical nucleic acid. What's interesting about them is that they, on a sequence-for-sequence basis, exhibit dramatically different properties from their linear cousins. And those properties involve, for example, the ability to get into cells rapidly, and they do so by engaging scavenger receptors. Once inside cells, they have a very limited immune response unless you're targeting the immune system with specialty oligonucleotides. And they also resist degradation, which means that they have a longer therapeutic lifetime. From an in vivo standpoint, as you noted in the intro, when systemically injected, they have this unusual ability to cross the blood-brain barrier and localize in tumors. And that's what then gave us this idea that we could begin to use them to create a therapy for glioblastoma. And through a great collaboration with my colleague, Alex Stegg, who really is the driver of this on the biology side of things and also even the biomedical side of things, we engaged in a 4-year-long study that has culminated in this very exciting paper that I think forms the foundation for potentially a new drug for this disease.
Previously, you have applied these SNA nanoparticles to skin. So why did you now decide to use them to fight glioblastoma?
We've been evaluating, since they go into almost every cell line that we've studied to date, with the exception of mature red blood cells, what are the areas of application? Since they do go into so many different types of cells and tissues, we thought local delivery would be very important. And one area where local delivery could be extremely important and useful is in the area of dermatology. We then began to study the ability for them to move throughout skin, and what we discovered was that you can put them in ordinary ointments, not transfection vehicles, but just creams, things like Aquaphor, and when put on mouse skin, they will pass the stratum corneum and move throughout the skin layers, and you can affect knockdown in live animals, which I think is extremely exciting. When you look at that, you start asking, well, where else can they be used? And of course, many people would like to develop systemic drugs that can be used for lots of different types of diseases. Alex Stegg came to us and said, hey, if these things go into cells so well, maybe they'll cross the blood-brain barrier. We had a try. Let's see if we systemically inject them into mice, will they do that? And lo and behold, it turns out they do. And we think they do in part through this ability to engage these scavenger receptors that shuttle them across. And once inside the brain, they move throughout the tissue very rapidly, and they localize in tumors. And so that then cued us off and told us to effectively initiate a study to ask, could we do knockdown in live animals? could we get the particles into tumors, and would they move throughout those tumors, and would we be able to target genes like BCL2L12? And it turns out you can, and you can see both the knockdown effect with respect to the gene, but more importantly, you can cross-correlate that with decreased tumor growth and increased animal survival. And that's without combining it with chemotherapeutics, which we think the ultimate drugs will do.
When you tested this in your mouse models of human cancer, you saw all these beneficial effects. You saw tumor growth decreasing. You saw prolonged survival.
That's correct.
And is BCL2L12 specifically in the brain, or is it anywhere else?
Well, it's overexpressed in these tumor cells. So that's the whole point of this platform. We can't target anything, but we can target extremely well at the genetic level. So we typically pick systems where a disease tissue, a disease set of cells, overexpresses a particular gene. Take the fact that when injected systemically, the particles will go almost everywhere, but because of their limited toxicity, unless you are targeting a specific gene like BCL2L12, which will facilitate apoptosis or cell death, live with the fact that they go everywhere and target genetically, in this case in the brain, cause apoptosis, decrease tumor volume, increased animal survival.
The fact that they can cross the blood-brain barrier and accumulate so readily in brain tissue, does this prevent them from being safe for use in humans at all?
It depends. It depends on what use you're talking about. So as I said, there is no known toxicity, significant toxicity associated with gold. And pharmaceuticals, especially in the area of rheumatoid arthritis, have been based upon gold and used in people for quite some time. That said, these are constructs that are systemically delivered. They cross the blood-brain barrier, and it's a small percentage of dose, enough to affect gene regulation, but it also carries with it the gold construct, and we'll ultimately have to see what the long-term consequences are there. We view this as an exciting development because if you want to go after neurodegenerative diseases, this is one of the few, in fact, maybe the only constructs known involving gene regulation types approaches where you can get significant accumulation in the sites that matter. And so, although I think it's a major win and major plus in terms of glioblastoma research, it could be equally important or even more important in the area of neurodegenerative diseases, including things like Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease.
With a major benefit being that you can deliver it intravenously.
Absolutely.
I'm guessing there are several experimental hurdles before this new nanotherapeutic can be used in people. So what further studies might be necessary for translation?
Well, we are in the midst of that. So we are moving into human trials, we hope, next year. One of the things we have to do is we have to scale the synthesis of these. We now know we can make 600-liter batches of these, which is extremely exciting. In addition, we have to do tox studies, which we've engaged in, and those are looking quite good, and we have to do two different species. We're in the process of completing those studies, and then we'll head into a phase zero trial, we hope, next year. And fingers crossed, we will see very similar types of results in humans. We have to work with subtherapeutic doses in the phase zero trial, but from those studies, we will be able to determine whether or not in humans they also cross the blood-brain barrier and localize in glioblastoma tumors in humans.
Finally, looking forward, can you tell us about things people may not think about, such as regulatory or funding or any other translational barriers that you expect when moving this to a clinical product?
Before any of this can be translated, we have to raise the resources to go through those trials. We're going to get there, I think, certainly with the phase zero. But we want to accelerate the development of these as drugs. The negative of a disease like glioblastoma is that it is not large enough to get big pharma interested at an early stage. And so there's the chicken and the egg. Even if you have something incredibly promising, you have to get above a certain bar in terms of human trials before you can get the attention of the folks that can mass produce it and ultimately sell it. And so we work with the university in this case and a variety of other organizations to try to raise the resources to get these early constructs through the early trials that will get them past, hopefully, the point of no return and down the pathway to the development of a real therapeutic. And all indications are quite good that this is a very good strategy and one that is very modular. This is not the first and only drug for this type of disease that will come out of this research. We are looking at a whole variety of combined therapies where we can target multiple genes and combine these also with chemotherapeutics as well so that you can maximize the impact of the drugs that you deliver. But this crossing the blood-brain barrier, which will come out of that early trial, I think is going to be monumental in terms of validating this type of technology and determining whether or not it is good for treating a variety of diseases of the brain.
Dr. Merkin, thank you so much for joining us today, and congratulations on an exciting paper.
Thank you.
That was Chad Merkin, professor of chemistry at Northwestern University and director of the Northwestern University International Institute for Nanotechnology. Check out his paper in the October 30th issue of Science Translational Medicine by going to our website at stm.sciencemag.org. I'm Megan Frisk, and thanks for listening. This podcast is a production of Science Translational Medicine and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, working together to advance science and serve society.